my daughter, she says, 3 o'clock in the morning, you're going to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning? And I said, what if it was your kid? What if it was your kid? What if it was your grandma? What if it was me? Wouldn't you want somebody to go out and find them? And she's like, yeah, mom, you're right. So yeah, it's, they're proud of, I think everybody's family is proud of their person.
Hello, I'm Eric Anderson. The voice you just heard belongs to Carla Egan. She is one of the many people you will meet as we introduce you to Saskatoon Search and Rescue in Season 6, Episode 8 of YXC Underground. There is a group of extremely dedicated and well-trained volunteers in Saskatoon who are always ready to help at a moment's notice when a person is declared missing. These volunteers make up Saskatoon Search and Rescue, and they are not only doing amazing work in our community, but the entire province as well. We introduce you to these volunteers in this episode of YXC Underground. It's a Thursday night in late March, and I am surrounded by people in orange shirts and sweaters, as well as people who are working hard to earn the right to wear these orange shirts and sweaters in an old fire hall near Aidan Bowman Collegiate. Specifically, I'm in a meeting room where large maps are spread out on tables, and new Saskatoon Search and Rescue trainees are learning how to read these maps.
Same page. Yeah, so that one's actually off of the map.
Oh, awesome!
Because there's Range Road 3100.
Yeah, so it would be, if you look here, the Range Road's, they're decreasing to the west. So it would be like a few roads down off it. So west of this RMF.
It's training day for new recruits of Saskatoon Search and Rescue. It's an intense process. Whether you are a trainee or a veteran member of the team, you are put through scenarios and taught skills that will empower you to help find people when they go missing in all types of situations. It's an opportunity Shannon Simonson was excited to sign up for. He works at the potash mine in Allen, Saskatchewan, and has volunteered with Saskatoon Search and Rescue for just over a year. Shannon loves the camaraderie amongst the members.
That's one thing that's really cool about this is everybody here is a volunteer, so it's nobody's here to make money or get famous or anything like that. They're here because they're dedicated to the cause. And that just makes it so that you know that all your people around you are basically pulling in the same direction. So, yeah, it's awesome.
It really does amaze me that people like Shannon commit so much of their time and energy to this group. Since 2019, Saskatoon Search and Rescue has responded to 86 missing person activations, mostly at the request of the Saskatoon Police Service. Searches can take place in neighborhoods throughout Saskatoon, along the South Saskatchewan River, or in thick forests in northern Saskatchewan. As you are about to hear, Saskatoon Search and Rescue works closely as a team in order to do their job. Sherry Denis and Carla Egan are the two featured guests in this episode. Carla is a communications director with the group and is training to be a Saskatoon Search and Rescue Manager. Sherry Denis is a volunteer searcher who is also the director of Project Lifesaver. Now, this unique program protects people who are at risk of wandering in our community. Participants wear personalized wristbands that emit a radio frequency tracking signal. If a person with a wristband becomes lost, Saskatoon Search and Rescue can use this tracking signal to locate them. The program started thanks to a very generous donation from the Saskatoon Police Service and the Saskatoon Police Service Foundation, and has grown thanks to the generosity of the community. Sherry, who works as an educational assistant, puts her heart into this work, and I think that comes through in our conversation. She even demonstrates how her sophisticated equipment works. I met with Sherry as she was setting up a training drill for new participants and started by asking how Project Lifesaver works.
So families inquire about the program because they have a loved one who has a diagnosis which makes them vulnerable. So all of our clients have, are diagnosed with a cognitive impairment. So whether it's autism or Down syndrome or dementia or Alzheimer's or, you know, a acquired brain injury, basically they're at risk of wandering and they're just more vulnerable because of the diagnosis that they have. So once in the program, they have, they are given a transmitter bracelet, and that transmitter emits a frequency that's unique to them. So they're the only one in the city that has that frequency, and it runs on FM radio waves. So it doesn't rely on GPS, like a satellite signal. So it's not like Find My Phone technology or like the AirTags. It's nothing like that. And we don't track our clients. We don't call them trackers. They're more of a locating device. So that bracelet emits that frequency. And so if we need to look for our client, we, you know, confirm their specific frequency and put that into our special receiver. And then we start to search. We start at the last known position and we work our way outward. And we all communicate with each other by radio. So
how are you notified? When do you know when you've got to go into action?
That's a great question. So we train our families that if their loved one were to go missing, they need to notify police and start that missing persons report. But the key difference is they have to tell the dispatcher or the person that they're speaking with that their loved one is wearing a Project Lifesaver bracelet or a search and rescue bracelet. And that notifies the Saskatoon Police Service to notify us right away. So we get activated. Some of our more operational members will receive a call from SPS and saying that we have a Project Lifesaver client who's gone missing. We get the name. I have a database, which I store a lot of confidential information about each one of our clients. Things like a photo, a up-to-date physical description, some medical, you know, kind of questions and maybe medications that are pertinent to them, and have specific consequences if those medications are missed, and also sensory or behavioral, concerns that we need to be aware of. Basically, we want to have a really good idea of who we're searching for. And so police notify us. That one SAR member will get that call and then activate the rest of the team. And we confirm their unique frequency and everyone just starts searching.
Okay, so like it's one thing to say start searching, but like what does that mean? Like, what does that look like?
So we use an app called Active 911. And so all of us will receive that alert at the same time. And it's quite abrupt. In fact, tonight is a training night, so we had one just moments ago. So our phones lit up. It's that kind of, you know, ringtone that will wake you up in the middle of the night and maybe make your heart skip a beat. And so, and in there are details that caller that took, that person that took the call from SBS, they have got the information. So they'll put any information in that they have. And then we have we use WhatsApp as a group to kind of, you know, and then we also use our radios. So as soon as I get a call, I turn on my radio. So I'm listening. And I always have a receiver as the Project Lifesaver Director. I do a lot of meetings with families and I'm always doing battery changes and things like that. So I always have a receiver with me, and it has an antenna on it that is an Omni antenna. So it has a magnet that goes on the top of a vehicle, and that gets plugged in. The frequency of that transmitter that's gone missing, that person, is put into that receiver. And then I'm again listening for that radio chatter, and I'm also listening to who else has receivers. Our team has 9 receivers amongst us. Often people who live in different parts of the city will have them with them. We don't like to store all 9 of them here at the hall because we want them in the hands of the searchers as much as we can. There's always one in our SAR truck. And so whoever can attend at that time confirms the frequency,
sets up their Omni antenna and goes to that last known position. So if it's a home that they've left maybe in the middle of the night, or if it's a school that maybe a child's left or a care home, we go to that last known position and we're communicating with radio, okay, we don't need 9 people to go to the last known position, we just need 1. And then we are listening for that special chirp. It's a special signal.
I was just about to ask, how do you know when you're like getting close?
Yeah. With that frequency, as soon as we can hear, so there's different ranges on the receiver. The longest can be up to a kilometer, kilometer and a half. And if we can turn down that range, then we know we're really close. Once we hear that first signal, we would notify our team by radio, but then we would get out of our vehicle and safely go to an area that's kind of more open a little bit, like a park, or it doesn't really have to be, it can just be like a sidewalk. And then we detach the Omni antenna and we open up the Yagi antenna. And so it is a directional antenna. So it's going to give us which direction we're hearing that signal. So we do a very slow turn to make about 360 degrees. And we really get that strong, we want to know where the strongest signal's coming from. And then we notify our team. We kind of stay put. We never want to lose a signal, but our teammates can then triangulate. So they can say, if I say, okay, I'm hearing it most, the strongest coming from the east, they may go past where my range is on my receiver and then start kind of triangulating. So, and then we all communicate by radio. I'll just turn it on here. So that chirp that you're hearing is the, you know, that special sound of an active transmitter. So, and as I do a 360, you will hear that it's getting louder in a specific direction, and that is where my transmitter is. So I'm just going to complete my 360. Notice how it dropped off there? Yes. And I may get some feedback from, because I'm right in between some vehicles here, but. Just completing that 360. And so if this was a search, I would start running in that direction. Yeah.
You would just run, hey? Like,
I would start running. Yep, because someone could be freezing. Someone could be really cold.
Are you, like, on call is not the right word for it, but, like, do you have to be ready to go at all times?
Yes, all of our members, we are on basically on call, yeah. 24/7. Some of us are retired, some of us work full-time, some of us have job flexibility where we can leave our jobs. So between the whole membership, there's always people who are willing and able to participate in a search. We do have standards of as far as training. We want most of our members or all of our members to attend a good portion of the training throughout the year. And we train quite often. Actually, a lot of our I guess more experienced members are having, you know, are invited to the basic searcher just to get that information again. So it's another new group of people that are starting, but the older, I guess, more experienced searchers still can contribute to those training days. So
this might sound like a really silly question, but like, you know, say you and some friends want to go to a movie on a Friday night. Can you, and you're in the movie theater, can you just, like, do you allow yourself to relax and enjoy the movie? Or is there anything in the back of your mind where it's like, I might have to go, I might have to locate someone? Like, can you ever just relax? Or how does that work, Sherry?
I feel like when we're on call, we will get up in the middle of the night for any person that's missing. I think that, you know, obviously, if you've just worked a night shift for 12 hours and then you are asked to search, you may not have enough in the tank, right? And not enough left to give, and you don't want mistakes to be made in the field. And so I think we have a good balance of members who can drop everything at the drop of a hat, or and attend a search. And then we have some members who, you know, for example, we sometimes get called by the RCMP. Well, that is often an out-of-town search. It could be a long distance away. It could be overnight. And some people with families or pets or elderly parents, or, you know, we still have lives, and it is a SAR life balance, but we are passionate about looking for people and, participating when we can. I think that it's also safe to say that if we're asked to go and look for, sometimes we may be called out on a search to look for evidence, I may not jump out of bed knowing that I have to get up in a couple hours to go to work. I may not get up and do that for that call. But if it's, someone who's freezing in the middle of the night, I think that I will. And I may, take that time for my work, or, notify my employer and just, explain the circumstances. So some of us do have flexibility in our jobs and some of us just don't. So yeah, that's the reality of it.
Why do you do this?
I joined SAR. First of all, I was working part-time. So I had time to give, and, many years ago when I was younger, I thought about policing as a career, and it didn't end up, my path didn't go that way. This is a part of, like you said, that excitement of getting that activation and having skills and an amazing team. And, I have a radio. We're able to navigate by compass if we need to. We use, Cal Topo, a GPS, mapping system to be able to, have us all on, a grid so we can see where each other's searching. We train. And the training that we do is not in a classroom. It's always in a field or in a park or, by car. And so we always try to keep those skills up to date and current. And I feel like I joined SAR. I'm an educational assistant, and I see families, my families of my students, and they, I'm sure, sleep with one eye open all the time. And so I feel like this is another way that I can support the families of people with vulnerable individuals in their lives. And that's, I've been the Project Lifesaver for, this is my fourth year, and I love it. I love meeting with families. I love the connections that I make with, both our clients and the families. Often I get to see them when I do battery changes or train the families to do the battery changes. The batteries are good for 60 days or 30 days. And so going in and just being with the family and kind of surrounded, it's special.
You are listening to Episode 8, Season 6 of YXC Underground. My name is Eric Anderson, and we are featuring Saskatoon Search and Rescue. Follow and listen to YXC Underground wherever you find your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, you should give it a 5-star review. By day, Carla Egan works in a long-term care home here in Saskatoon as a recreation coordinator. Tonight, she is proudly wearing an orange Saskatoon Search and Rescue shirt and jacket. Carla worked really hard to earn her place on the team. In the fall of 2020, she saw a social media post from Saskatoon Search and Rescue looking for new members. Her kids were becoming more independent, and her background of working with people with dementia gave her the confidence to think she could help. Nearly 4 years later, Carla says she has grown in so many ways thanks to her training and made friends with people from all walks of life. Carla shares some very powerful stories in our conversation and how her colleagues are always there to support each other when the job gets difficult. I started by asking Carla how someone becomes a member of Saskatoon Search and Rescue.
Well, like tonight at their training, they're going to be learning navigation, so how to use maps and compasses. So we usually use technology, but we have to go back to the basics, because if technology fails and we're in the middle of the bush looking for someone, we, like, the cell phone stops working, the GPS batteries freeze, we have a map and a compass, and that's how we're finding our way through the bush. And so we have to start with the basics for all of our new searchers, and they don't get to be called basic searchers until they complete the training. They are called recruits right now. And so we have 12 of them that are just starting. They're on their, I don't know, fifth day of training or something like that. But it's 40 hours, but we usually do about 60 or more. We do evenings, we do weekends for about 3 months. The current members train the new members. We have a training team led by our training director. And then the rest of the team just kind of fills in where needed and shows them the ropes and tries to help them learn. But they learn everything from survival skills, so bushcraft, firecraft, set up shelters with tarps. They have big backpacks. They carry gear. It's endless gear. And if they're any kind of a gearhead, like, they're at all the outdoor shops in the city and ordering on Amazon and all those kind of things to get their gear. And we like the color orange. That's our orange.
Look lovely in orange right now,
well,
Carla.
There's a few different
oranges. Oh, that's a brighter orange underneath the burnt orange sweater.
This is the usual. And I don't know if you've seen the, like, all of our t-shirts have Saskatoon Search and Rescue on them. So we do have a uniform. Like, we are very proud to wear a uniform and be seen as leaders in our community and professionals, because we look at this as a professional volunteer role.
Yeah. I want to get to that in a minute, because it's really hitting me just how much of a commitment this is. But when you were doing your training and you're back to basics and it's map reading and compass, like, were you, like, are you an outdoorsy person, or
Totally overwhelmed. Now, you have, like, you talk to a few people. You know, we have an educational assistant. We have an archaeologist. We have a director of recreation and therapies at a nursing home.
That's you.
That's me. We have an accountant. We have, you know, mine rescue people. Like, we have people from all kinds of backgrounds. Something that we do look for in a person is someone who has some kind of outdoors ability, especially if you're going to become a basic searcher, to just be able to, like, have a little bit of knowledge of the outdoors and willingness. Willingness is actually probably more, you know, important. Like, I probably, when I was a kid, took some kind of orienteering at camp, but who even knows if anybody remembers that. So it was a lot of learning for me, a lot of learning for other people, not as much, because they have those, you know, skills already. They do those things in their, you know, leisure time. They're out in the back country and doing, you know, skiing and hunting and fishing and all those kinds of things. So they're, like, know those things. Yeah. And the rest of us who work in, you know, indoor environments, and, you know, that takes a little bit of learning, but I love the outdoors, and it actually pushes me to be outside more. Okay. So, and it's a good thing.
Yeah. Was there, in your training, were you, like, I don't know if you were, like, if you surprised yourself, but was there, like, were you, when you reflect back on it now, were you like, wow, like, I was able to do those things?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Like, very impressed with myself at points, and other times thinking, wow, like, I have work to do, and I want to keep up with my team, and I don't want to let my team down, and I don't want to let the person, the subject that we're looking for, down. Yeah. So whenever we go out there, that's the first thing that we're thinking of, is who's out there, why are they out there, what's happening, how are we going to get to them so that the worst doesn't happen. And so you don't want to let anyone down. Yeah. So
Now, when you say out there, like where do you guys go in terms of, and I know it probably varies, but where like are some common places that you might be asked to go and do a search and rescue?
So we're part of a provincial organization called SARSAV, Search and Rescue Saskatchewan Association of Volunteers. That's what it is, SARSAV. So we're part of them, but we focus more on Saskatoon. So we do urban searches. We do urban-rural interface, in other words, the river, up and down, in and out of the city. But then we can also be called out to searches anywhere in the province. So we've gone up to Granite Lake and Hudson Bay and Smeaton. I don't know if you remember the little lady who was picking mushrooms that went missing a couple of summers ago. Our team members were there with other teams from across the province. So everywhere, wherever the search is, they pick the three teams closest to that area first, and then as you know, as time goes by, they will expand their reach for searchers to come from other locations. Okay. So we're everywhere.
When you get the call, what goes through your mind personally?
Okay, what's my life at right now? Am I at work? Do I need to go right away? So some of our searches are, yes, right away. Some of our searches are, we need to be in Hudson Bay at 9 a.m. Things like that happen. So then you're taking inventory of your life, right? What's going on with my job? Thankfully, I have a pretty flexible job. I'm able to say to my boss, there's a missing person, and he says, go. But not all jobs are like that. So some of our members, you know, that's a barrier to them being able to volunteer, but I have family, I have pets, you know, other commitments that are part of a regular life. And you just kind of have to think, what of those things can I cancel? How long can I give? You know, I might be able to give a day, I might be able to give the morning, I might not be able to go until later. So we have an app that the search managers send the message out to everybody, and then you just say, I'm available, unavailable, later. You respond, so then that person knows how many searchers are coming.
Do you feel pressure to say yes, or do you, like, for yourself, do you give yourself a moment to kind of go through, okay, where is life right now?
When I was starting, I felt a lot more pressure, but as I've gone through the paces with the team, I understand where I put the pressure on more and where I'm, because I can't bushwhack. I've tried. I'm not.
When you say that, what does that mean?
That means going through like bog and trees where I couldn't see you through the trees, standing this close to each other. So I can do it, but I'll probably die trying. So I am a burden to my team if I try to do that. So my expertise is with people with dementia, people who go from home. So in Sherry's program, Project Lifesaver, I live in the neighborhood where there's lots of elderly people, lots of people in that area are part of the Project Lifesaver, so it makes it fast for me. I know how to do it quickly. I have experience with the person once I find them. So I feel like my efforts can stay in the city more than out in the bush. So some of our searches aren't necessarily in the bush. They might be up north, but they might be searching through a reserve. So town, fields, roads, in cars, you know, there's lots of different ways that we search. So sometimes my skills would still be used in a northern search when somebody else might be the one to go through the thick bush.
Okay. Thank you for explaining that. That's quite the visual. I'm just thinking like that thick bush, and you and I are so close, and yet you wouldn't
be... There's like places where there's like you're walking through the grass and you can't see the person right next to you.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's What is that like?
You question how good of a job you're doing because you can barely see your feet, right? So it takes a lot of mental stamina. Plus you have about 3,000 mosquitoes trying to eat your face, as, you know, Northern Saskatchewan can be.
Yes.
You kind of question, am I doing a good job when I'm out here? And am I covering the right area? We do have maps and we have GPS and we get tasked by the police. So either RCMP, well, when we're in the north, it's RCMP, or in the city, it's Saskatoon Police Service. And they basically give us, you know, this is the person, this is what investigation we've done so far. And our search managers will work with their search managers and we will, you know, figure out what are the plans? What do we think this person did? Where do we think that they went? What is their mindset? There's something called lost person behavior. And it's a whole kind of, there's statistics that have been all put together for different kinds of people. So little kids, bigger kids, older kids, despondent people, people with dementia, hunters, you know, there's all kinds of different categories and they all have different statistics and they've put the statistics together and it tells us what are the likely things that this person is going to do. And then so we take that plus information that we know about the subject that we're looking for plus the area that they've gone missing in and we try to put it all together so that we can come out with a plan to be able to find them.
So you're thinking about all of that. You might be in a physically challenging part of the province. And like you said, there's mental challenges weighing on you too, in terms of like not only figuring out, you know, how can I find the person, but like you said, you know, am I being a good teammate with my team? Carla, there's a lot going on there.
there's a lot. And, you know, I think the way that we do our training is that we give our team members, our new team members, little bits to bite off in little pieces so that they can become comfortable with certain things first so that it leads to another task that they will then feel more comfortable with each thing as they go. And then they're not just all learning it in one big chunk and then going, I don't know what you just said, and now I have to go out on a search. Yeah. So it's, I think the way that we've created our training schedule really gives us an opportunity to give them the best start that they can get so that they can feel confident and comfortable. It takes a little while, though.
Yeah. May I ask you about your first search?
My first search was young gentleman with autism who had left his group home in Saskatoon. We got called at about 3:30 in the afternoon and we searched until about 2 a.m. and we still hadn't found him. Another crew was continuing on and he was found the next morning in the mall. Yeah, that was my very first search, my most memorable search. I don't know if Sherry told you about any of the searches that we've had for Project Lifesaver.
She told me about one. Can I just stick with your first one though?
Sure.
Like when it's going for that long, like do you remain patient or do you feel frustrated or antsy or like how are you feeling as the search continues?
Yeah. We are always looking for a live person, a live subject. We are working as hard as we can to make sure that we find that person before anything bad happens. And so it keeps you going. I mean, there is a wall that you hit at a certain point, but we try to manage that with breaks and, you know, making sure that our teams have food and water and rest. There's, you know, 60 minutes of searching has to equal 10 minutes of rest, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of rules. And so, Yeah, you do. You, and you're also, as a searcher, not the one who makes the decision, really. You're getting tasked by your search manager and led by your team leader to do whatever it is that they've asked you to do. So if you've been asked to walk this set of six blocks and search every back lane and every yard and every street and behind every car, that's what you do. Even if you think that maybe that person isn't there, you're looking, because you know that as long as you haven't, like, you've searched the area the best you can for the subject, and if it's just as important to know that they're not there as to know where they are.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I get a strong sense of, like, this is very much a team and everybody has, like, a different role to play. Would that be right?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Do you like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because then we don't all have to be perfect at everything, right? We have people who are amazing at the logistics, the computers and the GPSs and all of that, you know, IT stuff. Then you have Sherry and I who are good with the people. And then you have other people who are motivating. So they're the leaders who are pushing the teammates to keep going and look up, down, and all around. And, you know, those kinds of things. So everybody has their own role to play in the team. And it works that way. Yeah.
Okay. Most memorable search for you then?
So my most memorable was a Project Lifesaver search where we found our subject. I think it would probably have been about 2 hours after she left her, but we didn't get notice of it until she had been gone for a while. Okay. So the people who are caregiving, so whether that's family or the caregivers in a home, have to tell someone that the person has gone so that Saskatoon police can call us with those receivers, like Sherry was showing you. And so we found her in, I think Sherry says 27 minutes. And she was already severely hypothermic. Her pajamas were frozen to the ground. She was laying in the snowbank with her little walker parked beside her, with her little stuffed cat in the basket. And Sean, the big tall guy that you saw before, he was with his receiver over the fence, and he and I was coming perpendicular to that fence, and he said, "Carla, right over there." And so I turned the corner and she was down the way, and I got there and I knelt down right over top of her head, her face, to see if I could see if she was still alive. And I put my face as close to her as I could. And she did a little. That was it. That was all. She was not moving. She was cold. Like, her body was cold. Her face was cold. And all there was that little tiny puff of air in and out.
What did you do?
I just put my face to hers and I said her name and I said, "We're here and we're going to help you." Because in my line of work, I know that people, no matter kind of where they are in their life, their hearing is the last thing that they can, they're listening. They're always listening. And I wanted her to know that even if that was the end, that somebody was there with her. And so I just put my cheek to hers, and then the rest of my team came flooding in. And so, you know, we're all trained, highly trained in first aid, and you don't move a severely hypothermic person, because that can make their heart arrest. So police were coming, ambulance were coming, everybody was coordinating all that while I just stood over top of her. And I didn't stand over top of her. I was kneeling down with my face on her cheek and just telling her name, like calling her name and telling her it was okay. We were going to get help. We're here. We're going to get you warmed up. Took off my jacket, put it on top of her. At that point, nothing was going to matter. That's how cold she was. None of that, like, put a blanket on her. It makes you feel good, but it's not helping her. She needed to get taken to the hospital. So the ambulance came, and she actually did have a cardiac arrest on the way to the hospital, which is what happens when somebody is jostled around. But they were able to restart her heart, and she lived. I think she had dementia, so she was, I don't know how old she was, elderly person. She lived another year and a half after that. And so, and her family, I mean, they had nothing but amazing things to say. And yeah, it was a super memorable, like, unbelievable night.
What did you do when, like, when she's in the ambulance and she's on her way to the hospital? Like, what did you have time to sort of comprehend what just happened?
No, yes and no. We do a debrief at the end of every search, every training exercise, everything we do. We stand around in a circle and we talk about how we felt, what happened, what was good, what wasn't good, what can we do better next time, what did we learn. And we also talk to each other about how we're feeling about what happened. So we take each other's mental health into consideration when we do searches. So the people who are closest to the event, like, somebody's checking in. So I had people checking in with me. There was a couple other people that were right there with me. So we all kind of checked in with each other and made sure, you know, we have SISM supports and stuff like that within search and rescue. But yeah, it took, like, we did that debrief. Then I went home, tried to sleep. Like, it was 3 a.m. You try to sleep.
Did you sleep?
I probably did a little bit, but nothing significant.
Yeah.
But it ran through my mind for probably 2 weeks after, like, a constant rolling through my mind. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah.
I
know. I thank you for sharing that story, because I can tell it's like it had a deep impact on you. You mentioned the supports. Is that important? Because I know you hope for the best in every search and rescue, but sometimes it's not a happy ending. Is it good to have that team there to support when you do have those instances?
Yes, absolutely. And we have some team members that are trained in mental health, basically mental health first aid. There's different programs that have different names. And so there are team members that have taken training courses and classes so that they can be the team supports. And then there's outside of our team supports too. So, but yeah, it's kind of a big deal. And then you have to talk to somebody that knows. And I think that's what helps when you have somebody on your team that can speak to that kind of thing with you. They get it. They know, they've been there. They've been around the search and rescue scene, and they know how it feels. So it feels like you're being heard by someone who understands.
My thanks to Carla Egan and Sherry Denis for inviting me to their training session and sharing their passion with listeners. I want to mention that Saskatoon Search and Rescue is a nonprofit organization and relies on donations and grants for its funding. The organization's biggest fundraising event takes place on Monday, April 22nd at the Broadway Theater. It is hosting the Vancouver International Mountain Film Festival, which is made up of some amazing outdoor films. Tickets are $20 each, and you can purchase them on the Broadway Theater's website or at the door. I have my tickets, and I hope to see you there. You have been listening to Season 6, Episode 8 of YXC Underground. My name is Eric Anderson. I host, produce, and edit this local independent podcast. You can listen to YXC Underground wherever you find your favorite podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Good Pods, or on the website yxcunderground.com. Please feel free to leave a 5-star review if you like what you hear. You can follow YXC Underground on social media. Simply search YXC Underground on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And a special thank you to Sean Taylor from Saskatoon Search and Rescue for sharing some wonderful photos with me of the organization. Sean, I sure appreciate you sharing these amazing photos, and I know listeners and viewers are really going to appreciate them. My thanks to Saskatoon's Danger Dynamite for creating and maintaining the website, and to my cousin Andrew Dixon for the original theme music. Before I go, I would like to acknowledge that these interviews were gathered on Treaty 6 territory and the traditional homeland of the Métis. YXC Underground is a production of the Salt Hammer Production Company. My name is Eric Anderson. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon, Saskatoon.